So the updated information continues to support the EPA findings that the current discharge is not a significant source of toxoplasmosis in the local sea otter population or of domoic acid toxicity. Moreover, application of the proposed conservation measures will largely resolve any remaining concerns. Those measures allowed the Fish and Wildlife Service to concur with the EPA finding, thereby concluding the Section 7 consultation process. The long record of extensive monitoring data that has continued to demonstrate that this discharge is small and highly localized and has no material impact on the marine environment. In contrast, other interested parties have not provided any new information, data, or analyses that implicates this small discharge in the marine perturbations that span vast areas of the coastline. Instead, it has become increasingly apparent that the massive nutrient input from large-scale upwelling and runoff is primarily responsible for harmful algal blooms, and the non-point source runoff of onshore contaminants is a principal contributor to otter mortality. As far as supply performance, this bar graph shows that its continued effectiveness at the current treatment levels at reducing the potential for influences on these two principal issues identified in the biological evaluation, namely solids emission, which is the only pertinent factor in determining the significance of the plant's influence, particularly any toxoplasmosis oocysts within cat feces would be largely associated with solids discharge, and any nutrient loads that could conceivably contribute to harmful algal blooms would also be largely sequestered in these particulates. Thus, the continued high performance of the current treatment process demonstrates why the plant is not a significant contributor to algal blooms or toxoplasmosis, and why its continued operation at these high performance levels during the next permit cycle is acceptable. The dark green bars here show the plant has and currently is performing it better than secondary treatment standards with regards to solids removal. These are actual plant measurements, and over the last 4 years, the treatment process has removed 93% of the solids from the waste stream. That is a level that far exceeds the 75% removal requirement in the current permit, shown here, and it even exceeds the 85% removal requirement for secondary treatment. In fact, the treatment plan has exceeded the secondary performance standard in every single month over the last 4 years. Thus, even though the plant will be operating under a 301H modified permit during the upcoming permit cycle, we can be confident that this plant will not be discharging particulate loads any greater than a plant operating at minimum secondary standards. Accordingly, any potential influence on the incidence of toxoplasmosis and algal blooms would also be similarly limited. If there's no questions, Ms. Luke will now provide an update on the current status of otter and pelican populations.
Hi, my name is Bonnie Luke, and as you said, I'm with Marine Research Specialists. There's just a couple of things we'd like to share with you. One is that we recognize that it's been some time since we were before you and since the EPA's biological evaluation was prepared and submitted. So we've got a couple minor updates that we just thought you should be aware of. Firstly, many of you may already be aware that in February of this year, the brown pelican was formally proposed for delisting as an endangered species. The brown pelican is seen by many to be a success story for the Endangered Species Act, and the population residing off of southern and central California has rebounded dramatically from less than 1,000 breeding pairs back in the early 70s to over 11,000 as of 2006. The species has far outstripped the initial recovery measures set for it, and the repopulation along the coastline continues to be something that we are rather enjoying watching. The second item is naturally something about the Southern California sea otter. At the previous hearing, the most recent survey data available indicated that the otter population was around 2,735 individuals. However, since then, data from three additional spring censuses has been collected and analyzed. So, in brief, in 2006, the numbers dipped a little bit. In 2007, they jumped up significantly over 12%, topping the 3,000 mark. And the latest census conducted in May 2008 calculated that there were approximately 2,760 otters residing in California. This is the third highest count on record. Variability in these counts, as you noticed, can often be rather dramatic, and that's why the U.S. Geological Survey in their recovery plan published in 2003 advocates the usage of a three-year running average when looking at the population in terms of recovery. This approach reduces the influence of an anomalous high or low year. The chart shown up there, the value currently applicable is for 2007, and that's an average of the 2006, 2007, and 2008 spring census counts. With the recent growth seen in this chart, has come additional range expansion for the otter. Since the biological evaluation was prepared, the U.S. Geological Survey's most recent count and survey extends further to the south and the north because of this expansion. Most prominently, the southern range extent now extends beyond Point Conception all the way over to Coal Oil Point in Santa Barbara County and as far north as Tinitas Creek in San Mateo County. On a more local note, although the number of otters counted in the Estero Bay area is generally highly variable, the 2008 census did note a dramatic decrease in the count this spring. However, we're not particularly alarmed about that because recent studies have shown us that there's a lot more to otter movements than we previously were aware of. In particular, while the Estero Bay count was down significantly this year, it wasn't a surprise to the USGS scientists because there was an almost equal increase just to the south between Point Sal and Pismo Beach. And this has to do with the fact that male otters and a lot of transient otters do regional movements. So what we see as local variability sometimes isn't as much a death or increase in a population that resides locally so much as it is movement between significant geographic distances. And that's basically all we wanted to let you guys know what the latest census data was and give you an update. Thanks.
Thank you. Well, you have 13 minutes. Are there more speakers? Okay. Well, we'll move on then to NRDC. We'll go to our NRDC speaker, Michelle Mehta.
Good afternoon, Chair Young, members of the board, and Director Strauss. My name is Michelle Mehta, and I'm an attorney with the Natural Resources Defense Council. And as I'm sure you know, NRDC has been involved in this process for a long time, and we have opposed a 301H waiver from the very beginning, and we do continue to oppose a waiver because we feel like the plant has not met the legal burden under 301H of the Clean Water Act. We believe that some of the findings in the Fish and Wildlife Service's concurrence letter do support our position. The service recognized that the plant may be contributing to the presence of domoic acid and T. gondii ooensis in the marine environment. The service recognized that there is a large cluster of T. gondii seropositive otters within a 20-kilometer coastal region centered on the towns of Morro Bay and Cayucas. And the service also recognized that both the sea otter and brown pelican are susceptible to domoic acid poisoning caused by algal blooms, to which nutrient loadings from sewage outfalls can contribute. The service does not say that there is no link between the plant and mortalities with the sea otter and the brown pelican. Rather, they acknowledge that current analytical methods have not developed accurately to test for that link. So for those reasons and for all the reasons we have put into the record prior, we believe that the legal burden of a 301H waiver has not been met here. We also just would like to remind you that we had a consultant put a letter into the record in 2006 that showed that that even a tertiary upgrade could be completed within one permit term. Finally, the service says that they believe that the decision to upgrade to tertiary treatment has significant potential to minimize effects, to minimize concerns regarding possible effects on the otter. EPA and the service can require mitigation measures under the Endangered Species Act, and because Morro Bay and Cayucas have voluntarily agreed to upgrade to tertiary treatment, we see no reason why that commitment should not be memorialized in the settlement agreement. That said, however, we do fully support Morro Bay and Cayucas' decision to upgrade to tertiary treatment. And we are very heartened to see that the process has been moving along at schedule and apparently even ahead of schedule. Tertiary treatment is the best way to minimize or even possibly eliminate the risk of harm to the marine environment. And it also shows a lot of foresight by Morro Bay and Cayucas, because as water becomes more scarce, in part because of climate change and growing populations in the future, this decision to upgrade to tertiary will leave Morro Bay and Cayucas with a consistent source of clean water. So we think other plants should be moving in this direction too, and I just wanted to note that NRDC has strongly been advocating that the federal government invest a lot more money in wastewater infrastructure for projects just like this one. So as long as we see that there's no backsliding off of the city's commitment to go to tertiary treatment, NRDC does fully support Morro Bay and Cayucas' decision to upgrade to tertiary treatment. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Let me ask you a question, and this is what boils it down for me, you know, with this issue with the T. gondii. It looks as though there's no evidence that there's anything in the effluent itself, and perhaps that's because the laboratory methods have their limitation.
Mm-hmm.
We also have evidence that the second highest rate of incidence of T. gondii in animals is up in the Elkhorn Slough area, and there is no 301H waiver discharge up there. And we have a lot of freshwater flows from Elkhorn Slough. We have freshwater flows coming into Morro Bay. And I'm trying to reconcile that information. I mean, to me, it appears as though there's very little information or evidence that the plant itself is contributing any T. gondii, but there's ample evidence that these fresh water flows are really the source of the problem. So I noticed that your objection is based primarily on a legal standard.
That's
that
right.
You feel needs to be met by the discharger.
That's right.
And can you define that a little bit more?
Right. The standard under the 301H waiver, there's a number of factors, but the main one we've been focusing on is that the discharger has to show that the waiver will not interfere with the protection and propagation of a balanced indigenous population of fish and wildlife. And so while we have noted that there's evidence on the other side, there's a lot of evidence on both sides, but we believe that the language of the 301H waiver puts the burden on the plant to show that, to overcome all this evidence that shows that there is a problem. And so I acknowledge that there's evidence on both sides, but we believe that that there's ample evidence that there is an issue as well. But like I said, that said, you know, we think that the best way to minimize the problem or even eliminate the problem if they reuse all of the treated water is to upgrade to tertiary. So we acknowledge that, you know, they've voluntarily agreed to do that. We would prefer to see that commitment memorialized in the settlement agreement, but we fully support their decision to upgrade, and, you know, we're very pleased to see this process moving forward.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks.
Mr. Shawcross.
Yeah, so you think if by us denying the 301H waiver, that will help them get to tertiary faster? Is that what you're telling me?
Well, our legal position is that the burden for a waiver has not been met, and that what should have occurred is an upgrade within the five-year period. Now, we initially came to that conclusion a while ago when only secondary was being talked about. When tertiary started being talked about, we actually did have a prominent consultant say that even tertiary could be met within 5 years so that a waiver wouldn't be necessary. However, you know, like I said, now that we see that they're moving forward, mm-hmm. as long as we don't see any backsliding from that, we do support what they're doing fully.
Well, would you support denying the 301H waiver if that would delay their going to tertiary?
It's a complicated question, like I said.
No, it's a real simple question.
Well, I don't think that it would delay their upgrading to tertiary, because if the waiver were denied, they would have to upgrade within 5 years. And as it's been acknowledged here, it looks like they can do that anyways.
So I don't think
it would delay. I think it would actually speed up the process, because they're moving forward, and it looks like, you know, what, an extra month below the time that they're looking at, they could upgrade within the five-year period.
Now, you have to understand that if there is no waiver, then they're liable for mandatory penalties, which could cut into their ability to finance the plant.
Well, they'd only be liable if at the end of the five-year period they hadn't upgraded. But, like, I wanted to recognize that...
No, that's not true. If they couldn't meet secondary standards,
well,
if they didn't have a waiver... Right.
But they could have a time schedule order so that at the end of the five-year period, instead of a waiver for the whole period,
mm-hmm.
so that at the end of the five-year period, they were meeting the requirements.
Okay. So let's go back to my first question. Would you support us denying the waiver if it would delay the tertiary treatment?
Well, I don't think it would delay the tertiary treatment, and so in that case, I wouldn't deny
it. But what if it did?
Well, that's a hypothetical question, and, you know, this
well,
is we're
it's
talking
a hypothetical,
about real-world circumstances.
It's a hypothetical question. Okay, that's fine. I don't want to get into it. Go ahead.
That's all I have. Okay.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Ms. Mehta. Steve Shemek, followed by Sarah Corbin, then Marla, Joe Bruton, and then Richard Sadowski.
Perhaps you could ask that toxo question of me. Good afternoon. It is afternoon now. Chair Young, Ms. Strauss, board members and staff. My name is Steve Shimmick, Executive Director of the Otter Project. I guess I should say hello to Mr. Henry on the phone. I think that this particular process has highlighted a paradigm shift that has occurred over the past few years. The 301H waiver, you know, was created many years ago because both regulators and developers thought the vast dilution of the ocean would, you know, could solve just about everything. And now we're learning, you know, otherwise. We're learning that some of the species that we have on the coast are so sensitive that perhaps we need even more stringent standards for coastal communities. And so that's the shift that has occurred. And frankly, that's the shift that has, you know, kind of muddled up this whole process. The reality is now, I think we all believe, that a 301H waiver just enables pollution. We have fears over the outcome of this process. We have fears Morobe and Cayucas will backslide to secondary treatment, and we will never see the benefits of tertiary treatment. Tertiary treatment will best reduce pathogens and nitrogen sources, specifically urea, that we have concerns about. We have continued fears over the mischaracterization of T. gondii ocean monitoring results and T. gondii impact on sea otters, cutting both ways, and mischaracterization of otter statistics. And finally, we have fears over some of the language being used to justify the extended timeline and issuance of the new waiver. Paragraph 6 on page 9 highlights our concerns. The second sentence of the paragraph reads, "The BE recognizes no likely adverse effects on southern sea otters and brown pelicans, provided that the discharger implement conservation measures." The last sentence in the same paragraph mistakenly paraphrases the statement by concluding, quote, "The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service letter concurred with U.S. EPA's findings indicated that continued discharges from the facility would not likely have adverse impacts to endangered species in the area. We read these two sentences as contradictory. NRDC has the lawyers on staff to better address this issue, and we concur with their opinion. But we have to wonder how a waiver can be granted if both EPA and U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service are saying that there will be no impacts provided that the discharger implement conservation measures. This implies that there is concern over impacts given the present discharge condition. We're in a tough spot. As has already been discussed, we concur with the NRDC's opinion that a waiver cannot be legally justified. However, we also support the plant's decision to upgrade to full tertiary treatment on or before March 2014. Thank you.
Any questions?
Mr. Schmidt, can you repeat the location of the text you read? It's in the staff report?
Yes, it's in the staff report. It is paragraph 6. It's way towards the bottom on page 9.
On page 9. And the paragraph starts with what sentence?
I don't know what it starts with.
Oh, okay. So can you read that again?
Dr.
I just
Hunter?
Want to be sure I see the language you're referring to.
It says... It begins with...
It starts with
USEPA.
Yeah.
Okay. Reading it, the BE recognizes no likely adverse effects on southern sea otters and brown pelicans, provided that the discharger implement conservation measures. And then the last sentence says, you know, given continued discharge.
Thank you.
All right.
Any other comments or questions for Mr. Schimmick? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Henry, you there? Okay, this is the chair. I just, you know, have a follow-up question for you. Did you hear Mr. Schimmick's comments?
Yes, I did.
Okay, and certainly I did pick that up myself when I read your letter, which is in our packet. And does Fish and Wildlife Service have a concern with the current level of treatment at the plant as to whether it is impacting otters or pelicans?
Yes, I think it's fair to say that we have concerns that discharge into the marine environment from the plant may affect sea otters and other listed species.
Okay, and what is that based on?
We did a thorough evaluation of the health of otters in the area of the discharge when we received the EPA's request. And it's an area that has been highlighted as suffering from a higher level of illness in otters than many other areas. And so just having a discharge in the area, we believe, likely contributes to some extent to the adverse effects on otters in the area. However, our conclusion in this process was that we concurred with EPA's determination of the not likely to adversely affect call. And we did that because, as we pointed out in our letter, the state of the science is such that we are unable to accurately measure and evaluate what contribution the discharge has on effects to our listed species. And so, per our regulations, if we are unable to measure that and evaluate the effect, then it's by regulation and definition, that effect is insignificant. And when described as insignificant, then our appropriate determination is that it's not likely to adversely affect.
Okay, thank you for that clarification. Next speaker is Sarah Corbin.
Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for the opportunity to speak. My name is Sarah Corbin. I'm the Central California Regional Manager for Surfrider Foundation, and today I'm speaking on behalf of the San Luis Bay Chapter of Surfrider Foundation. We regret that we are here today to consider reissuance of the 301H waiver, but we are very excited that this day really marks the beginning of the end of the waiver. This is a hard-earned outcome that has culminated from years of work from the city, from Cayuga Sanitary District, from regulatory agencies, environmental groups, and from community members themselves. We want to commend Morro Bay City Council and Cayuga Sanitary District Board for unanimously agreeing to upgrade to tertiary treatment, and also commend Cayuga Sanitary District Board of Directors for signing on to the settlement agreement. We do encourage the Morro Bay City Council to sign on as well so that this upgrade process can move forward. We look forward to continuing to work with these parties to achieve tertiary treatment with water reclamation for beneficial reuse. To this end, we feel that incorporation of this objective upgrade to tertiary should be incorporated into the terms of the settlement agreement, and we feel that this would be appropriate in that it would reinforce and solidify the level of treatment that has been agreed to outside of the settlement agreement. Conversely, not including upgrade to tertiary in the terms of the settlement agreement seems inconsistent with the unanimous agreement to go to tertiary. While the regional board may not be able to compel the discharger to upgrade to tertiary, we don't feel that it would be inappropriate for the board to support the inclusion of this language in the actual terms of the settlement agreement, as opposed to including it merely anecdotally, as long as the discharger agrees to it. Additionally, we are encouraged by the inclusion of a timeline in both the settlement agreement and the permit. However, we'd like to call to the board's attention that there seems to be a discrepancy in the number used to quantify the total length of time for the upgrade. The settlement agreement identifies the timeline as 8 years, and the permit states 8.5 years. While that might seem minor, it's important that these documents are consistent and that they reflect the 8-year timeline agreed upon by all parties in the settlement agreement. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your comments. Any questions? Okay.
I'll make one brief comment.
Yes, Dr. Hunter.
Actually, Ms. Corbin, would you come back up? I noted, I know you submitted comments on other issues, and I know we are not addressing those issues today.
That's
but
right.
I'm wondering if the triggered monitoring issue that you were interested in, some of what we're looking at is also being determined by the Ocean Plan, mm-hmm. which is a document that is constantly revised and updated to conform with what we know and new information we have about contaminants and discharge to the ocean. I'm curious if you had a chance to look at the Ocean Plan as well to consider opportunities that you might find there to begin to address the kinds of questions, because I think this will apply to other point discharge.
Yeah, and I think that's a point well taken, that that might be the more appropriate opportunity to influence the monitoring requirements. Thank you.
Okay.
Okay, Marla Jo Bruton. And last speaker is Richard Sadowski. If there's any other member of the public that wishes to speak on this agenda item, I would appreciate getting your speaker cards now.
Okay, I'm Marla Jo Bruton. I'm a resident of North Morro Bay. I'm here just to reiterate some of the concerns that public members of the public and our community have. The last JPA meeting that Morro Bay and the CSD had, there were comments about tertiary being merely a philosophical discussion. There was something proposedly said that one of the staff members had said that we have no legal obligation to build this plant. The Morro Bay and CSD are presenting to the public and you that they're well ahead on their schedules, yet their own basic five priority items that they set out at the, in 2006 for this process began with the number one priority was straightening out the relationship between the two communities. That number one priority has been deferred and to be worked on as the process went along. The second priority had to do with technical issues, and at this point, my understanding from the unless something else has occurred that I don't know about, that they were having to go back to the first technical aspects and just deal with technical people on issues before they could go forward. So in other words, they don't have really an agreement between themselves on flow, capacity, percentages of the ownership and responsibility to treat these things. So in essence, my comments are that although they have gone ahead with the Corollo and the Master Facilities Plan and what have you, the first two priorities they haven't even established, which are two primary things. And what I think happened is that this five-year span of time that's taken place since this discussion began, still the first two priority issues have not been addressed. So as far as backsliding, I would really appreciate seeing, well, first of all, I haven't seen a settlement. Is there a signed settlement agreement?
There's a draft in the in the supplemental sheet.
I can describe that. There, the three, Mr. Briggs and the two other parties, signed a settlement agreement before the May 2006 hearing, the beginning of this hearing, and presently there is a revised settlement agreement that includes minor revisions to that already signed agreement, which would be to identify that EPA issued a biological evaluation and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service's action on that, and making some other minor revisions. So there's no substantive changes to the already signed agreement. So it will still need to be signed by Mr. Briggs and I, but it doesn't make changes over the already existing signed settlement agreement.
Okay.
And that new revised version has been available for several weeks and is available today, I believe. If you want.
I've just seen the redactions and things like that. I haven't seen a document anywhere. One other thing I wanted to say briefly is that...
Could you wrap up your comments?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Morro Bay now in our aquifers... We have two polluted aquifers with nitrate contamination, and there's compelling evidence that an MTBE cleanup remediation has allowed dilapidated collections exfiltration to be pulled into that aquifer. And with this plant being the population of 13,800 being the population that's looked at as far as the size of the plant and the plant determination to be a small discharger is misleading in the fact that both of these communities are major tourist destinations, and on peak tour seasons, peak holidays, and what have you, we have more than 50,000 people. We have at least 30,000 just in Morro Bay in hotels and what have you. So some of the exemptions that Morro Bay and the CSD are looking for here as far as non-point or point source pretreatment obligations are, I think, based on factitious overall... The holistic picture is not being looked at just to begin with as calling this plant a small plant discharger. Okay.
Thank you for your comments.
Yeah.
Richard Sadowski.
Richard Sadowski, citizen of North Morro Bay. I'm also a volunteered member on the directory of experts to the Ocean Protection Council's scientific advisory team. And I want to remind this board that beginning of next year, Dr. Amber Mace is going to be hosting an emerging contaminants forum. And maybe some of your board members can be sitting on a panel. I worked in the Cayuga Sanitary District between 2003 2004, and during that time I did collected an extensive flow data and basically was in charge of calibrating the flow meters that calibrate how much sewage is being pumped out of the 5 lift stations in Cayucas. In addition, I had done miles of infrastructure televising and was able to even get FEMA funding for the serious dilapidated issues that occur in Cayucas. And then followed up later in 2007 after the meetings that you had with regards to the waiver, a series of reports that were submitted to your staff, Harvey Packard, the city of Morro Bay board members and their staff, and also to you personally, Ms. Alexis Strauss and Tam Dudek. The evidence in those reports is compelling and basically shows that we do not have any idea on how much sewage is being even pumped or needs to be treated at the wastewater treatment plant. The denial of this waiver is essential. We don't have an accurate amount. The severity of our dilapidated infrastructure is such that it's exfiltrating sewage. There's estimates of over 1 million gallons a day. We did a follow-up report with the nitrate issue after Tim Cleath and associates had done their study in the Morro Basin Aquifer. We did a follow-up report that shows that the possibility of the remediation work that occurred at a boundary area of an aquifer had allowed exfiltrated sewage to enter the aquifer and pollute our city wells. We need a regional board to take a really close look. You can't put the carriage in front of the horse. Okay, we gotta, before you do anything, before you build a plant, you gotta know what are we looking at. And the data, I think, is pretty compelling that we need to take a serious look at our infrastructure before we issue any waivers. Thank you.
Mr. Sadowski, do you have any evidence that there's 1 million gallons a day?
These are estimates. These are estimates based on usage and the size of populations. What we have evidence of is the dilapidated infrastructure that occurred. A lot of that evidence you can find in the FEMA video reports that are at the Cayuga Sanitary District, and also you can find them at the City of Morro Bay. We reviewed some of their tapes. If you look at our reports, we even have pictures there. So you can take a look and see for yourself. Thank you.
So this is in the collection lines leading into the plant?
Oh, yeah. Where's about 20-some-odd miles just in Cayucas and in Morro Bay. All of Cayucas' sewage flow goes right down North Main Street in Morro Bay.
Right.
And we have serious problems there with pollution, and that might explain a lot of the, you know, discrepancy between your data on Toxoplasma gondii from a 301H discharge and the leaching of raw sewage into our water supply.
Thank you for your comments.
Thank you,
Mr. Keough. Any comments about the leaking infrastructure of your wastewater collection system?
I think that the reports that have been issued by Mr. Sadowski have been responded to by the city, and I believe those responses have been passed on to regional board staff.
Can I just interrupt for a second? You know, that this was noticed to consider issues that were subject to the notice, and I know this is an interesting issue, but it's not a part of the notice that was, and to start having a discussion about it doesn't. Isn't fair to the parties, and it's not.
Well, it's not fair to me. My reports were responded by Mr. Dylan Wade.
This is just not the location for this, because that's subject to a different permit, the collection system permit. That this community is subject to a separate permit. It's not part of this permit.
And so,
how can you issue a permit for an amount?
Mr. Sadowski, hang on 1 second. Our attorney is right. We're getting on a side issue here. That doesn't mean it's not important, but this isn't the venue to take that issue up at this point in time. Okay. That's our last speaker. What would the board like to do? Mr. Brick, do we have some?
Can I just make a recommendation?
Sure.
Because Mr. LaCaro has to leave, that if he has any responses to any of the comments, that maybe he could have an opportunity before he has to go.
That's fine.
Yeah, I don't have really any responses to any of the comments. Most of the comments that were made were already responded in our staff report, or
in
our
fact sheet.
Yeah, I just
wanted to make sure.
Sure. Just to make sure. Does the board have any questions for Mr. LaCaro before he leaves? Dr. Hunter?
Thank you. I think this is for you, David. I'm really interested in knowing how the Ocean Plan drives these permits generally. And since I'm learning more about how the Ocean Plan is not regularly, but often revised and reissued, where are we in that cycle now? And is this permit subject to changes that occur in the Ocean Plan standards? Do we have the opportunity then to revise existing permits within the region?
I can answer that question. The board is required to impose in a permit the technology-based standard, which in this case is the secondary standard, plus any more stringent standards necessary to any more stringent effluent limitations necessary to meet water quality standards. And in this case, those extra water quality standards would be contained in the Ocean Plan. Mm-hmm. So this permit, as I understand it, includes effluent limits that implement the Ocean Plan standards. If the Ocean Plan gets changed during the term of this permit, then at the next permit term, they would be then considered for revision of the permit, but generally not during this permit term. So if there are new Ocean Plan standards that come into effect, the next permit would have to address those.
Okay.
One caveat to that, there in the federal regulations, there are specific requirements for reopening a permit. Right. And in order to reopen a permit, you have to meet those specific requirements. So there could be an exception to, you know, that a new Ocean Plan standard might be able to be evaluated before the 5 years is up, but it would have to meet the reopener provisions in the federal regs to do that.
And then, do you want to talk about the pathogen standards specifically, which may change?
Right.
Yeah. Please.
EPA has been at various times challenged to update the science, which are the underpinnings of the pathogen standards for ocean waters. If EPA were to decide, for example, as it had a few years ago, to put out a national promulgation to update the, for example, the pathogen standards, the bacteriological requirements, EPA could do it in various ways, one of which would be to just promulgate those nationally for marine waters, and then states could, at their own pace, usually within 1 to 2 years, in California's, amend the Ocean Plan to pick up the new federal requirements. And that will probably happen sometime in the next few years when EPA completes its current effort at updating the recreational pathogen standards for which SCWRP is doing the science.
And just one more thing I could add to your question, to the response, is that the board can change the monitoring program administrator. Well, you could add monitor. Mr. Briggs could add monitoring. You couldn't decrease monitoring without having a public meeting.
Right. But so that's where we have the opportunity to stay consistent with new information.
Right. Exactly.
Right.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other staff comments? Any board questions or comments? Okay, Matt.
Yeah, Matt Thompson, Water Board staff. I have some history with this issue, and I just wanted to augment staff's written responses to comments and address two of some of the overarching comments that I heard during public comment. One was which there was a suggestion that you should memorialize tertiary treatment in the settlement agreement. The second was concern, addressing the uncertainty regarding the the data at Morro Bay Cayucas with regards to sea otters. Regarding the first issue, the concern that Morro Bay might backslide to secondary treatment, I personally don't think that's going to happen. Morro Bay is currently dependent on imported state water, a fairly meager supply of local groundwater, and desalinated seawater. I believe there will be plenty of future demand for recycled water, which would require tertiary treatment. The tertiary treatment element to this project makes Morro Bay Cayucas' project more competitive for grant funding. That's all to say that there's really plenty of incentive for Morro Bay and Cayucas to go to tertiary. Reality is that the tertiary component only adds $2 million to the project, I think maybe even less than that. There are really no water quality-related reasons to require more than secondary treatment for this ocean discharge. So these are just some of the reasons why staff believes it's not necessary to memorialize secondary treatment in the settlement agreement. Tertiary treatment in the settlement agreement. On the second issue, with respect to some of the concerns raised by U.S. Fish and Wildlife about the uncertainty in the data, I would just submit that there right now is really no actual difference in the water quality being discharged by Morro Bay Cayucas and other ocean dischargers in the Central Coast region. And so a hypothetical were you to require more of Morro Bay Cayucas, that could potentially establish an expensive precedent for other ocean dischargers in the range of the California sea otter and potentially all of California. So just something to consider.
Matt, do you mean that the levels of solids removal currently at Cayucas Morro Bay is comparable?
Correct.
To the other ocean dischargers in the Central Coast region?
It's in fact better than some of the other dischargers in San Luis Obispo County. I think I reported to you in May 2006 that Morro Bay's discharge quality is actually better than South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District, a discharge which is about five times more in volume than Morro Bay Cayucas.
Okay.
That's
thank
all.
You.
Thanks.
All right. What would the board like to do?
Couple of comments, Mr. Chair.
Go ahead.
I'm happy to see that they're going for tertiary treatment. That was one of the issues I was concerned about. Especially you can use tertiary treated water for recycling purposes. The other thing I think I addressed was the timing, and I'm still a little concerned of the 8.5 years total time to build this plant when I look at a little city of Hollister that built their plant in much shorter time, and it's a fully tertiary treated plant. And I just think that there could be a shorter time interval in building this. I'm concerned about the backsliding from tertiary back down to total secondary because of possible funding problems that they may change the whole situation. But other than that, I think we should move on with this particular permit.
Any other board comments, questions? Okay.
Looking for a motion.
I'll move staff recommendation.
I'll second.
All right. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. Motion carries unanimously. All right. Ms. Strauss, it's your permit from now on. All right. Thank you very much.
Thanks, everyone. Thanks, Alexis.
Thank you, Roger.
Yes, we are going to break for lunch, and Francis, Roger, when will we be back?
No closed session.
Is
Carol about quarter after two? Quarter after two would be good.
Quarter after two, we will resume. And Mr. Henry, thank you for participating.